everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy John Couch. John engineering and producing our program on this Friday, July 3rd, which is the designated observed holiday for the 4th of July. But we are here live with you. So much important news that this is no time to be taking the day off. So we're with you here live during the noon hour on 10:30 Tucson's Voice for trusted local news and talk. Of course, we have worldwide live listening. People can listen to this program, and they do anywhere in the world through my website, buckmastershow.com, which where you piggyback with KVOI.com. Media partners, shout out to TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News, and Sahorita Sun, the Tucson local media group and its portfolio of publications, including Inside Tucson Business, the Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. The Friday Focus interview today is with Will Hummel, the Executive Director for the Arizona Public Health Association. Mr. Hummel was the Director of the Arizona Department of Health Services. In other words, he was the state's top health officer from 2009 to 2015. Joining us on the live line with the conversation with Mr. Hummel, Tim Steller, columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Tim, how are you today?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good. It's been a pretty wild week.
Yes,
it has. Wild into it as well, but well, so it goes.
Thank you. We're glad you carved out a few minutes for us, and we're also, of course, very happy that Will Hummel is with us. Will, how are you?
Hey, good afternoon. I'm doing great. I'm coming to you from Prescott this afternoon.
Trying to get away from it all for a while, huh?
Yeah, a little rolling thunder even.
I want to start with your very sobering quote that you had in the major piece in the Washington Post yesterday. The quote is, you look at what happened in Lombardy, Italy. You look at what happened in New York. That's what is about to happen here in Arizona. People are going to die because our system is overwhelmed. It's important for other states to learn from us. This wasn't bad luck. It was avoidable. Don't let this happen to you. Look back at the past few months, and we're an example of what not to do. Your comment, please.
Yeah, I mean, well, as you know, we're moving into crisis standards of care. I mean, really, all the hospitals right now are in surge mode. Now, surge doesn't when you're in surge, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're using crisis standards of care to manage patients, but we're headed there pretty quickly. And as you know, the vice president was here this week and made a promise of 500 or more healthcare providers, respiratory therapists, ICU nurses, et cetera, which is a resource that's really badly needed. You know, so often you hear about the number of beds that are available. It's not the beds that matter. It's the number of staff that you have to manage patients that's so critical. And that workforce is what will, if we end up using crisis standards of care and making those challenging decisions, it will be because we didn't have the workforce we needed.
Now, I'm a little confused. Has the governor said to hospitals, there will be cut out elective surgeries completely? What's the deal here?
So what the governor and the health director have said is that that hospitals are not, they were urged, I mean, basically ordered to implement their surge plans. And those surge plans usually include stopping elective surgeries. Now, how you define what's elective and what's not is an art and a science. So obviously there's people getting a bypass surgeries and so forth. Those are not elective procedures. There's others that are more questionable, like, you know, you've got prostate cancer, for example, and it's not going to kill you tomorrow, but that's the kind of thing that might be delayed. And so they've been urged to implement those surge plans, which includes stopping some of the elective procedures. And that's really built out of necessity because we've got to manage this coming continuing influx of patients with COVID-19.
Is this a de facto death panel, Will?
Well, I wouldn't call it a death panel. What it is an algorithm. It's a decision-making matrix that's objective that helps. When you do get into that situation where it's, you know, you're having to triage patients differently, You need to have an objective way to do that that's consistent. And that's what that crisis standards of care document does. It provides that mechanism for objective review. But there is a check and balance in the system. If you read the document, is an important distinction. It's not, let's say your personal physician wouldn't be the one who would be making the decision. They remove it one level so that there's a level of objectivity involved, because obviously if your doctor's been with you for 20, 25 years, it'll be challenging for that doctor to remain fully objective about how to triage you if you're seeing you as a patient for so many years. And so it's more of a secondary review in terms of making those critical triage decisions.
All right. Tim Steller from the Arizona Daily Star has been very anxiously waiting to speak with you. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, I don't know. We have spoken before, but things have changed since even then. You mentioned in this Washington Post story the things that we did wrong. You said it was avoidable. Could you list the things that we did wrong that if you were in charge, you would have done differently?
Yeah. So number one, I would say, as we moved out of the stay-at-home order on May 15th, there were no compliance measures or no enforcement measures. Neither of those things were in place as we emerged. And so businesses, whether that's a bar, restaurant, nightclub, et cetera, were encouraged to follow CDC guidelines for mitigation. But there was no compliance check. There was no mitigation measure that was objectively measurable, and there was no enforcement. And so that sent a message to the business community, nightclubs, et cetera, that it's okay to operate business as usual because you're not going to get punished. Combine that with the fact that there were businesses that wanted to do things right and did do things right at first, but they saw their competitors just blowing it off. And so the kind of behavior metastasized. That's one thing. Number two, the executive order prevented local jurisdictions. This is number 36, prevented local jurisdictions from doing anything over and above what the executive order said they could do. And so that tied the hands of cities and towns and counties from doing some mitigation on their own. Again, handcuffing the locals. Now, those handcuffs came off about 2 weeks ago. And as we saw, they jumped all over the mask and requiring masks, not all jurisdictions. Prescott didn't. That's where I am. So that's one thing. Another area that could have been improved is to make opening contingent on having enough contact tracing capacity within a county health department. And making that a contingent opening would have put pressure on, it would have allowed businesses to put pressure on their county boards of supervisors to finance the contact tracing that was necessary within each county using CARES Act money. You could have leveraged your stakeholders to break loose the money from the board of supervisors' budgets and get that straight to the county health departments. And then the final thing is, I know it's a long answer, but there's a lot of things you need to do to do a better job.
We want to hear the details.
Yeah, is nursing homes and assisted living center they make it so that opening was contingent on having the right kind of infection control within assisted living and skilled nursing facilities, both with personal protective equipment and also routine weekly testing of staff, because that's how the virus got into those nursing homes and assisted living facilities, with healthy staff that are in their 20s and 30s coming in asymptomatic and spreading it to people in their 70s and 80s, et cetera. And those are the persons that have been populating our ICU beds and leading to that situation that we have now, where there's not enough capacity for the folks that we need to treat.
Tim, I know you have a follow-up, and then I've got something for Will before the break, so go ahead.
Thanks, Bill. Are we really unique in those problems? I feel like much of the Sun Belt states, much of the West, had those same faults. Am I wrong about that, or is that the case?
Yeah, the public policies were similar in Arizona, Texas, and Florida, and South Carolina. In other words, the decisions that their governors were making were really remarkably similar to what our governor was making in terms of compliance and enforcement, all those things I just mentioned. Similar public policy, but different. We got the results here are worse than in those two states. If you look at the number of cases per capita Arizona is twice as bad as Florida and Texas. Now, Florida had a huge run-up in the last 2 days, so I don't know if that's still true. But, you know, and the other thing is our percent positive rate on the, you know, we talk about on the PCR testing, the diagnostic test, the percentage of those tests that are positive in our state are between 25. Yesterday was 29%. The next highest state is Florida and Texas. Their percent positive is like 13%. So we're almost twice as bad as those other states that are getting a lot of the media attention.
All right. Scott Gottlieb, the former FDA commissioner, tells CNBC yesterday that one way or another, this thing ends in January. Herd immunity or a vaccine? Will humble your opinion.
If you look at the trajectory of what's happening in Arizona, the ASU Biodesign Institute is remarkably accurate so far. And what their model has shown is that Arizona, on the trajectory that we have now, given the public policy that we have right now, would put us at herd immunity right around Christmas time. And that's a grim thing, because, as you know, that means a lot more people are going to be infected between now and Christmas. Now, having said that, if we have great mask-wearing compliance across the entire state, and if we were to have a statewide requirement, which we don't, as I mentioned, Yavapai County, where I am right now, doesn't have a requirement, nor does the city of Prescott. If we had good compliance with that, if behavior changes significantly, it's possible that we could slow down the spread of this virus and still not be at herd immunity by Christmas. And I sure as heck hope that we have a vaccine by January, because ultimately that is the fail-safe. That's the end goal. And by the way, I am confident we're going to get a vaccine, or more than one vaccine, maybe two or three approved vaccines. The smartest people in the whole world are working on this. And the risk, the research and development risk is being handled and taken by the federal government, which is a good thing, because it speeds up vaccine development markedly when the financial risks are pushed off to the federal government instead of the vaccine manufacturers.
And the herd immunity would be 6 or 7 of each of us living in Arizona by Christmas. Is that what we're saying? Would 6 or 7 of us would be at one time or another positive? And then of those positive, 35% to 50% may not show any signs or symptoms. Is that right, Will?
That has been... That statistic's been, in terms of the asymptomatic spread, that's been consistent since the Princess Cruz outbreak at the very beginning of this. So, yeah, it looks like about 35% asymptomatic. We don't 100% know what the herd immunity threshold is. I've heard estimates of anywhere between 45% and 65%. Fortunately, it's not like measles where you have to be up at 95%.
Right. All right, Will, stick around. Will on the phone with us, Will Humble from Prescott, Arizona, where he's taking a much-needed break. Will has been all over the national media. He's been called upon by just about every national source, and we're glad to have him with us. He's been with us on several occasions. Tim Steller also sticking around from the Arizona Daily Star. It's the Buckmaster Show and the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We'll be right back.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Bill Buckmaster with you. We're on the live line, two live lines occupied right now. Our focus interview, the Friday focus interview, Will Humble is with us. Will is the executive director of the Arizona Public Health Association. He's also the former head of the Arizona Department of Health from 2009 to 2015. Tim Steller is here from the Arizona Daily Star. Math has never been one of my strong suits, Will and Tim. In fact, I'm lucky to do the checkbook. But I want to go back to this herd immunity. Perhaps 10 times more. There's been some speculation that the number of cases may be actually 10 times more. So if you figure that, if that were the case, we would be at about 1 million Arizonans right now who would in some way either have had it or have it right now. To get to herd immunity, then, we're talking about at least 2.5 to 3 million more people. Is that about right?
Well, actually, the best data that we have to measure where we are with herd immunity is the serology tests. So when you hear about cases on the news and those reporting, those are the diagnostic clinical tests called PCR tests. But they're also doing antibody tests. You've heard about the University of Arizona doing a antibody test of, right, you know, first responders, et cetera. So that looks at, you know, where we are as a population in terms of people that have been infected with the virus but have recovered. And I believe last time I looked, our percent positive on the serology test was something like 5 or 6%.
It's 3.3%. I'm seeing right now.
What was that?
So 3.3%.
Oh my goodness!
We got a lot further to go than what you just said.
Oh.
So I think that estimate of 10 times more, than the number of diagnostic cases is ended up being an overestimate, at least from what we see in the serology tests.
Okay, now what are we going to do about if these numbers keep going up? We're over 90% of the hospitalizations. Will we utilize perhaps a tent? Tent accommodations, former and now empty medical facilities that could be used. Well, what's your thinking on that, Will?
Yeah, so there's two components. Number one is where are you going to do the treatment, and then who's going to do the treatment? So the where part of it, you've already seen within hospital walls, them repurposing different parts of the hospital to make them into new ICU bed units, for example. So there's a lot of repurposing and reformatting of care within hospital walls happening now. I think it's possible that we could see some physical tents being put up. I heard that there's a couple hospitals that have already got some tents set up. I don't know if there's patients within those tents yet. So that's that part of it. But as I mentioned at the top of the hour, the critical component here is having the staff to do the patient management and treatment. It's more critical, honestly, than the physical location of where you do the treatment. And so that's why it was so important for the governor to ask the vice president for those resources when the vice president was here last week. And hopefully he follows through with that 500, that promise of 500 healthcare workers, because we're going to need it. And I know many of the hospitals have already, they've been bringing ICU nurses in for the last several weeks for relief for the existing staff. I know, I believe TMC's done that. I know some hospitals up here have, but we're going to need a lot more than that. And so just because of the nature of where we are. So again, I can't reinforce the importance of staffing enough. That is the critical control point.
Okay, Tim Steller of the Star.
Yeah, I don't want to belabor this point about herd immunity, but I think it's really important. Why is it not desirable that we just proceed apace to achieve herd immunity, thereby robbing the virus of people to infect?
Yeah, I mean, that's the Swedish strategy. That's what they implemented in Sweden. And by the way, if you look at Sweden's outcomes, they're remarkably like ours in terms of deaths per capita and number of cases even per capita. So it's a value judgment we're making, really, which is to say, if you're going to rely on natural herd immunity, in other words, getting infected with the virus as they approach to squelch out this pandemic, it means that you're willing to sacrifice a percentage of Arizonans in that effort. Because if that's your approach, more people are going to die. So it's really a value judgment. Could it work? Yeah. I mean, it would. It's a strategy that could work. Is it ethical? That's a separate question. And so I think the consensus, at least so far, has been that it's worth the mitigation measures in order to save as many lives as we can until we get to that vaccine, which would be then the mitigation measure that we're able to use to prevent spread to the rest of the population and save. So it's really, it comes down to saving lives, which is a value judgment and an ethical question.
When the vaccine comes on board, hopefully the end of the year, early in the next year, do you, as a public health official, would you see the protocol being something like this, Will? Would you think first responders will get it first, then everybody over 65, then 55, and so on? Your response, please.
I think I'd go after people in assisted living and skilled nursing facilities first, and then people over 70 and 80 in that area. That's my main focus at this point, would be those first doses. I would get those doses out to the people that are contributing most to the hospital capacity issues. After that, I think there's a lot of things that you could do, depending on how you want to approach that. It could be healthcare workers after that. It could be people with BMI over 30. Body mass index, because that's a huge risk factor for using, for death and hospitalization. Obviously, some questions about how to implement that and whether that would happen. But I think the elderly first, especially those in congregate settings.
All right, now Tim Steller.
Oh boy, now I've lost track of what I was going to ask you. Oh yeah. You were talking about the ethical choices, and it's so difficult. I know in my case, and the cases of many people I know, this effort to stay away from each other is also having massive toll. It's having an economic toll, and it's having a psychological toll. How do you, as an expert in this, balance the toll of staying apart against the toll of, you know, getting people infected.
You're absolutely right about this. And this is something that's troubled me from the very beginning. And especially when you're talking about stay at home orders, like we had for maybe 6 weeks here in Arizona, maybe it was even 7 weeks, the enormous toll that that has taken both on public health and economic development, on things like substance abuse, mental health, child welfare, criminal justice. I mean, you go down the line.
Education, Will. We're going all online here in Tucson. That was announced just yesterday.
The consequences of a stay-at-home order go on and on and on. And so that's why I'm reluctant, even as we are right now, to even suggest another stay-at-home order, just because the collateral damage is just so tremendous. So that's the thing. It's, you know, here's the way I look at it. The highest return on investment intervention that we will have until the vaccine comes is a mask, is a cloth mask. And for the life of me, I do not understand why there are people that say, that believe that that is some sort of an infringement. When people talk to me about they don't like the idea of wearing a mask, I tell them, look, if you're a conservative, you've got to believe in high return on investment things, don't you? Well, what's the cost is nothing. You could tear up a T-shirt, the economic cost. They're going to say it's a freedom cost. I'm telling them, look, there's a lot of freedom lost that we experience with these interventions. Compare that to the freedom that you perceive you're losing by wearing a mask. It befuddles me to understand, because it could have, if we could get 90% of Arizonans wearing a cloth mask, the transmission of this virus would go down remarkably, which would allow us to avoid some of the other more intrusive interventions that what Tim just described, delaying school further. Substance abuse. It goes on and on.
How about in Prescott, where you are? What's the percentage? Who's wearing masks?
So I was down at the outdoor square, and I would say maybe 30% of the folks were wearing a face covering of some kind down at the courthouse. So more than I expected to see, given the fact that their jurisdiction here hasn't required it. It'd be interesting to see what happens at the rodeo tomorrow. So the rodeo's on up here. Apparently, they've got some mitigation measures in place, like reducing the number of people. But there is no mask-wearing requirement for this jurisdiction. So it'd be interesting to see what happens at the rodeo. I know some of the national news is going to be out at the rodeo to give a picture of what things are like. But it is an outdoor event. The rodeo is an outdoor event. So that's an important part of this. To me, the nightclubs, which are indoor events, and the stuff that was happening in bars, et cetera, over the last 6 weeks was a much bigger deal than, say, for example, the tubing and that kind of stuff that you saw, because those are outdoor events.
I want to follow up on the masks. The Texas governor just said it's mandatory. Okay, we know that even if the governor of Arizona says it's mandatory, it's not probably enforceable. But I think it's the psychological effect. So why doesn't this governor just say it is mandatory in the state of Arizona, like they have done next door over in New Mexico, like they've done now in California? What is holding him back, Will?
I just don't know him well enough to know what's holding him back. But let me go back to what you said about not being enforceable.
Okay.
I disagree with that. And here's why. It's ridiculous to have police officers say you've got to wear a mask. That's not the way you do it. The way you do it is you say, in order to come into this grocery store, you've got to have a mask.
Okay.
And you put the compliance onto the store manager, whether that's a retail store or a bar or a restaurant or a workplace. You put it on the employer and you put the penalties on the employer. You delegate the enforcement to the responsible party for that indoor venue. And in that way, you can't come in, you can't buy your groceries without a mask. And so I think it is enforceable, and I think it would be a great idea. And perhaps now that the Texas governor has done that, it might make it more likely that our governor will do the same next week.
So in effect, what I'm hearing you say is, if the governor says it's mandatory, it then becomes a de facto enforcement, just with merchants saying you will not enter this store unless you're wearing a mask.
Correct. And I think many merchants, if not most merchants, would welcome that, but they'd have somebody to blame, because what they don't want to do is say you have to have a mask to come in here, and then they have an argument with somebody at the front door because it's a store policy. This way they can blame it on the governor, you know?
Tim, do you have anything more for Will?
Yeah, well, I mean, this enforcement, what do you think about the enforcement of penalties, like civil penalties or other, you know, fines, that sort of thing? Is that necessary in order to get people to do the minimum to prevent the spread of the virus?
I think in the vast majority of places, that you think, I'm thinking of things like hardware stores, you know, retail stores, grocery stores, those, I think compliance would be great in those type of venues. Restaurants, that's a little more challenging because you go to a restaurant, you're eating. So, that's a more challenging sort of thing to do. And you'd have to have some other way of handling with restaurants, et cetera. So anyway, that's the way I think of it is that, you know, it becomes a de facto mandate. But okay. I think compliance would actually be satisfactory, not perfect. And we don't need perfect. We need, you know, 85-90%. And it'll tamp down this virus. This is, and by the way, we didn't know this at the beginning of the pandemic. At the beginning of the pandemic, it was actually pretty ambiguous whether masks were useful. But the data that's come out since then, especially a report about a month ago from the National Academy of Sciences proceedings, made it very clear that airborne transmission is dominant. And to be honest, you know, disinfection of actual surfaces is not as important as we thought it was at the beginning.
All right, I'm out of time, but of course I always have one more question, even though I am a couple minutes over, Will. Okay, peak number of cases in Arizona will be when? And my follow-up, peak hospitalizations in Arizona will be when?
Well, that's an easy question, Bill, because I don't know.
There you go. Okay. Will Humble,
easy thing to answer.
Will Humble, thank you very much. Enjoy your time up in Prescott. Hopefully it's a little cooler up there, right?
Oh, it's like right now it's got a soft rain and rolling sun.
Nice. Okay. Great. Have a great weekend.
It's nice to have a monsoon back, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Have a happy 4th of July. Thank you.
All right, take care. Bye.
All right, that's Will Humble with us, and he is the former state health director. Tim, stick around. I've got very little time, but there's a breaking story out of the city hall and the council that we need to talk about on the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio right after this.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
All right, welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Lots of content in our hour today. Thanks to Will Humble for his interview with us, former state health director. Tim Steller is still with us on the live line, and I think we learned some things from Will during that time.
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was very informative, but I want to turn to, and let me try to set this up, Tim Steller, Arizona Daily Star columnist. It's the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. A police advocacy group wanted to paint a thin blue line in front of the Tucson Police Department headquarters, that being symbolic, that thin blue line of supporting law enforcement. The city attorney and the city manager signed off on this, in effect saying it was okay. Then yesterday, Mayor Romero stopped it. Is that the setup here for this?
Almost right. The city attorney was not involved until after the fact. And to go back a little further, it was a request made to a couple city council offices to paint this blue line down the middle of the street in front of the police department. And Nikki Lee's office passed it on to the city manager's office, who signed off on it. But the city attorney was not involved until later, I understand.
Okay.
So nobody knew about this outside of the city until 4:32 yesterday, when the mayor, Regina Romero, posted a tweet that said, "Requests from white supremacists have no place on our city streets." And that was the text of the tweet, and then she had a subsequent statement that was posted in which she said that the person who had requested to paint the thin blue line has known ties to white supremacist ideology and is a known white supremacist sympathizer. She said, "I unequivocally disavow this effort that serves to incite and divide our community and minimizes the Black Lives Matter movement." Well, the reason I mentioned that nobody knew about this is I got a column coming out on this, and it just astonishes me that she chose to make this a big public issue for a few reasons, one of which is she called a certain man. She later reposted a Facebook post by this man, Tim Cecilini, and it had his name on it and everything. So she called Tim Cecilini a white supremacist. You know, I've spoken with him a couple times since this happened, and I don't know if he's a racist. I certainly suspect, based on all the evidence that we have, that he is in no way an active white supremacist like the Nazis that we've had around, or the people posting up racist posters around campus these days. You know, this isn't to excuse anything, but I just severely question the judgment of the mayor to elevate this into a debate targeting a relatively humble person who lives in one of the, you know, relatively poor neighborhoods of the city.
Right, right.
Now, I don't know his whole background. I do know what she based. Go ahead.
It's dangerous territory, isn't it, Tim? I think that wasn't there some comment from Councilman Kasacek that the mayor better have evidence to back this up, or the city may be looking at a massive lawsuit here?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the city is looking at a lawsuit for slander or libel. On the other hand, those are really hard to win. And, you know, what she cites as evidence of his white supremacy is a couple of memes that he shared on Facebook, which were, in my view, racist. That one of them related to the the Confederate flag. It said, if you can fly this flag showing the rainbow flag, then I can fly this flag showing the Confederate flag.
But getting back to why would the mayor be willing to fall on the sword over this kind of an issue?
Well, I don't think she perceived it as falling on the sword. To cut to the chase, I think she was appealing to the left, which is the side in Tucson, which is the side that she kind of always wants to appeal to when there's a choice to be made. And, you know, right now the energy the political energy in Tucson is with the Black Lives Matter movement and that sort of thing. And so she offended some people in that movement by the way she handled hanging the banner on City Hall. This is getting into the weeds, but it could be relevant here. So in that she offended some people in the Black Lives Matter Tucson organization by doing this, taking this action without their consultation. That's something I took from an op-ed in our paper. And, you know, maybe that's part of the motivation for kind of lashing out publicly this way. I don't know. I can't justify it. And you'll see in my column that it just doesn't make sense. There's no reason to turn this into a big thing. It not only throws this, you know, there's this concept called punching up versus punching down.
Mm-hmm.
And for the mayor to kind of expose this guy and call him a white supremacist, to me, that's punching down. You know, you're a powerful person and you're exposing him to at least an undue proportion of scrutiny.
And then, Tim, I was going to say, let's talk a little bit about the political fallout about this. You've got Steve Kasacek openly disagreeing with this, Nikki Lee. This is in the mayor's first, what are we in, 6 months of her term. This is the first kind of fracturing of what has appeared to be a really united council. This could have...
I wouldn't agree with that.
Okay.
I think what we're seeing is a fight of the left versus the liberals. And Romero is leaning toward the left. When I say the left, I'm talking about, you know, the progressive left wing. So Lane Santa Cruz would be on that side.
Right.
Romero would potentially be on that side. That's the way she's leaning right now. You know, Kasacek, Nikki Lee, maybe Richard Fiembres would be more in the liberal camp. I'm not sure. But in any case, I wouldn't agree that there's, I think it's a highly divided council. And Kasacek and Lee have been viewed as the kind of non-progressives, the regressives, I guess I'd call them. And attacked, criticized for not going along with the more progressive game plan. And I would say this is part of that, but there's bigger stuff going on too, which is it's not just the divisions within the council. It's like, okay, so Mike Rankin, she throws the city attorney the city manager under the bus on this, saying that he screwed up. But then the city attorney comes back and says, I was not consulted on this at all. I also, he says, was not consulted when people were given permission to write Black Lives Matter on North Stone Avenue by the library on the street. That, in other words, they painted a big Black Lives Matter and slogan. It looks good and everything. I don't know. I don't see anything personally wrong with it on its face, but he points out that this opens the city up to all kinds, puts it in an untenable situation.
Yes.
Because then everyone wants to plant their political slogan on the street.
Yep.
And so he said that first one should never have happened, and now this second one shouldn't happen either. But no one asked me. And he put that email out a half an hour after Romero posted her thing on Twitter. So it's a completely unforced error, you know, a self-inflicted wound. There's no, you know, it's the evening before a 3-day weekend. Yes, they were going to paint this blue line on Sunday. No, there was no reason to turn this into a big white supremacist thing. You could have handled it quietly, said, listen, please, Mike Ortega, revoke this permit for Sunday. Let's talk about it next week and decide
right.
how to proceed further. It didn't have to turn into this big divisive fight. We don't need more division. And to me, this was a very Trump-like act in the sense that it was building your own political fortunes on division of the society that you oversee.
Okay, Tim, I'm out of time. And where can we, is the column up on the website? Is this for tomorrow's paper or what?
It should be up on the website today. I'm not sure when it's appearing in
okay.
the paper.
All right.
But
anyway,
look for it this weekend in any case.
My goodness, what a year, huh? I'll tell you.
Well, it's bad enough without hurting ourselves.
I know. All right, Tim, take care of yourself. Stay safe, okay?
Thanks.
Okay, Tim Stellar, Arizona Daily Star with us. Dan Gibson filling in for the vacationing. Matt Russell is over in San Diego, I believe. Anyway, Weekend Watch is next.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
All right, time to stir it up, baby. It is Weekend Watch on the Buckmaster Show, presented by our friends over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. When you are ready to travel, and a lot of us are, and ready to hit the road and take a road trip, how about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, where there is plenty of social distancing, and our friends are ready for you over there. The best place to start, southwestnewmexico.org for the listing of some recreation ideas like hiking in the Gila National Wilderness and enjoying some very fine hotels in the area. So check it out, southwestnewmexico.org. Dan Gibson is with us from Visit Tucson, filling in, sitting in, or whatever, for Mr. Matt Russell, who's enjoying some ocean sea breezes over in San Diego. Hey, Dan.
Squatter's right. It's my segment now.
Yep. It's your segment. It's Weekend Watch with Mr. Dan Gibson. Hey, anything going on this weekend other than it is the nation's Independence Day holiday?
And Matt Russell's birthday tomorrow. So,
oh, yes, that's right.
To that lovely gentleman there, a great friend of restaurateurs and a great friend of me, but first of all, just point that out for Matt Russell. Plenty going on. So, I mean, let's say you're trying to get the grill ready, but you don't want to maybe go to Safeway. Well, I don't know. You want to get really high-quality meat, right? Who doesn't? Well, vegetarians. But other than that, who doesn't? Charo Steak, the Charo family of restaurants, have family grill kits available all day today, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Stop by Charo Steak in the heart of downtown. 7420 will get you two ribeyes, two New Yorks, two pork chops, two half chickens, a chili rub, lime tortilla, all the stuff. You'll be set. You'll look like the king of the king or queen of the barbecue.
Well, that's going to be quite a feed for you, isn't it, on the 4th of July?
I know. Or let's say you want maybe just one or two selected pieces. You want to get really high quality. You're already downtown. You could stop by Forbes Meat Company at 220 East Broadway. They have steaks, sausages, burgers, and dogs, and Wagyu beef in today. So if you want to just like throw it the whole game off and just get super, super high-quality beef, you could do that there. You wanted something to drink, too, right?
Yes, something to drink would be nice.
Yeah, I'd mix it up a little bit. Hop Street Lounge on the east side, they're having 50% off all draft beers today, and that includes growlers and crowlers and all the things that you can get filled up legally, so you can bring high-quality craft beer, including a ton of local selections. Hop Street Lounge is at 22nd Street in Kolb. Great place. You just have to use the promo code RONA. Nobody wants to think about their coronavirus, but at least in this sense, you get 50% off a beer. That's something, right?
Yeah, I was just flashing on who would want to use the priority code right now, Corona.
Nobody even wants to say it or even think about it.
I don't think that's the kind of messaging we want. And a guy from Visit Tucson knows about messaging in these.
Even want to think about it either, but
these hard times. Hey, Dan, the best to you and your lovely family. Stay safe. I appreciate everything you do for the show, including your great program last week while I was off for a few days up in Oregon. Thank you.
I gave it my very best. I tried to fill your very substantial shoes.
There you go. Thank you, Dan. Dan Gibson from Visit Tucson for our Weekend Watch segment. That's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Original theme music composed by my German friend, Christophan. Thanks to Rose Brandt, who makes sure all of those programs are put up on the podcast in a timely matter. John Couch does such a nice job for me engineering and producing this program. The entire team at Bustos Media joins me in wishing you a safe, pleasant Independence Day weekend. Have a good one.